Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. Would everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try and keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of support of AA singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that the anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be opened from the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you to our first three speakers. I would now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Gail.
Hi everyone, my name's Gail, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Mark, for asking me to share. It's always a privilege and an honour to share at my home group because, as I say, when I came in, I had nothing useful to say, nothing that anybody would have wanted to listen to. And today, through the practice and principles of the 12-step program, continuous sponsorship, and my home group, to whom I plead, you know, so closely, I found a way of living sober, which is just beyond remarkable, considering the alcoholic that I am. My sobriety date is the 1st of April, April Fool's Day, 1998. So I was 20 on Easter Sunday this year, and I am so humbled and so grateful by that, because I've only done this one day at a time, just as anyone else has, but I have also done it only with the help of my sponsor, my home group, and the old timers who've always been there for me, always guided me. And, you know, even quite recently, you know, the guys here were talking about it. You know, it's easy sometimes to take your foot off the gas, even if not consciously. And I have never thought I don't need AA. I've always known I need AA. I've always known I need sponsorship. And I've always known I need this program and my home group. Yet, as I say, not so long ago, there was a time when things sort of got on top of me, work and that sort of thing. And my sponsor and sponsor's sponsor needed to have a strong word. And when they have a strong word, they have a strong word, if you know Mary. And basically, as I say, I needed to be here, but they love me enough. This home group is so good at just saying, you need to get back on this now. If you drift off into that long grass that John talks about, you know, it is so simple to just keep walking without actually, it is so subtle that it's upon you before or upon me before, I know. And so thank God, you know, I had people in this group who cared enough to just say, you need to do this. And although I was doing all the suggestions and the other things, you know, it was just like one meeting. It's not okay. It's not okay for me. So when I came 20 years, I mean, it's just, I'm just, as I said, so blessed that it just seems such an enormous amount of time, yet it seems like yesterday. There came a point, at the end of March in 1998 where I was ruining my daughter's lives, my family life. I was leaving my young children to drink drive to go down, our little road and to the off license to just get something else to help me through the evening before my husband came home. And, Mike Dawson talks about it. There just came a point one day for nothing I can say other than divine intervention that the drinking hadn't been worse, the hangover wasn't worse, and I just woke up to this dark, complete black hole and knew I was done, knew it was over. And unless I did something, I just knew I would die. And I phoned a family friend, a GP, and she said to me afterwards, she said, I didn't think you were going to make 20 days, let alone 20 weeks, when you came in. Now, recovery starts here. It is the place, you know, our home group is the best in the world, as other people have said. It really is. And it's given me everything I've got today in terms of being able to cope with things, the structure, the discipline, you know, the way we help each other. And when I came in here, I just knew I wanted this with every fiber of my being. And I feel very lucky that I had, I believe, step one at that point. And Pat talked about it last week, so I'm not talking particularly about treatment, but that was my journey into here. I went into treatment, and I actually happened to go into the same treatment centre as Pat went. And there was a program about on television a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that I had to be taken away basically from my children. I mean, it wasn't any court order or anything, but really for me and for them that I should allow them time to recover, if you like. And the first thing the counsellor said was to the house as a whole, he said, you are not in recovery. You are in treatment. We tell you when to get up. We tell you when to go to bed. We tell you when to eat. We tell you when to go to group. Recovery starts when you walk out of those gates and you make the decision that you will go to meetings, you will find a sponsor and go through a 12-step program, find yourself a home group, and you will do this day after day after day. If you want sobriety, that is recovery, we're treatment. And I knew at that point I desperately wanted, and Dave Kay talks about, you know, that his sponsor said, be the one. And that is genuinely what I wanted to be. And for family reasons, I actually had to leave treatment, early, very briefly, to go home for a family thing. And I'm so, so grateful that happened to me, because the last things they said to me in the counselor was, get to meetings. And I was terrified at that point, because I'd only been dry a few days, that I was going to drink. So I found a meeting. And thank God, you know, because Mike D was there, Andy J was there, and Martin, who is no longer with us. And I have never in my life heard people talk the way these guys talked. I didn't know. They hadn't been long in recovery. And they were enthusiastic, and they were saying you could be sober, you could be happy, you could live this wonderful life. And I was blown away. I mean, normal people don't talk like that. Normal people are sort of, yeah, it's pretty good, it's okay. But these guys were literally on fire. And also there, although I didn't know at the time, was the person who was going to be on my sponsor. And I came away from there and absolutely full of hope that if these guys could do this, this is what I wanted when I came out. And so I did the time there, but it was a 12-step program, so I was very, very lucky. But when I came here, I knew this was real living. I knew that whatever happened there wasn't it. It was a term of dry safety. And I remember saying to the counselor two or three days in, when my sort of head had cleared a bit, I need to go home now. My children will miss me. They'll be really worried about me. And he said to me, he was the first person I genuinely believe who was genuinely honest with me. And he said, have you ever thought that your children might be having the first safe nights of their young lives for quite some time because they don't have to worry about you? And it hit me between the eyes like a rock. And I knew instinctively he was telling me the truth. And that's the first time I ever got any degree of honesty, real honesty in my life, and I knew he was right. So when I came out, the first thing I needed to do was get a home group and find a sponsor. And I'm so grateful that, you know, through a set of circumstances and people, I found this home group and I got a sponsor. And you guys all said the same thing, that if I wanted this program, if I wanted recovery, if I wanted happy sobriety, not just awful dry days, which were few and far between for me because I wasn't good at even having dry time, then I needed to do what you'd done. But you made me promises. You said these promises are in the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're through the 12-step program. You work with us to do this, and you can have this. Now, the guys that were here when I first came in are still here. There are a handful of them. And I'm so grateful, you know, and it's not just, you know, lip service. I am so grateful to Wayne and to Alexis for starting this group because I needed something that had that depth and weight that they talk about, because it's only that interest that can define an alcoholic and keep them interested. Because that frothy emotion appeal they talk about, people had tried all their lives and I just wasn't interested. I'd either play it or I would say, yeah, and think they don't mean me. But when I got here, you told me I had this allergy to alcohol. I was physically allergic to alcohol and created this obsession with it that no matter what I thought, I had to have it. And, you know, one drink too many, a thousand never enough. And that was really true for me because, you know, the places I sort of got into, the scrapes I got into, I just, goodness me. But I always got tricked into thinking it'd be okay next time. And the worst thing was that when I stopped or tried to stop or tried to live differently, I just felt so much worse, that it wasn't worth living like that. It was painful. It was injurious to me and to others, and I would start again. And, you know, I felt, I mean, Clancy talked about it in one of his shares, that his parents split up and it was unusual in those days, and he thought, that's it, it's their fault, I'm going to blame them. And I did exactly the same thing. And, of course, it's absolute nonsense because far worse things happen to many, many people, you know, and they don't behave like that. And it was my crutch, you know, and I mean, I was the one, like Jackie says, I was sitting at school looking out of the window, gazing and dreaming about going here, there or everywhere, anything other than school. And it soon became a part of my life. And so my parents never had very much booze in the house, but once it was only my dad, you know, there, I just took what was in there and got drunk and thought, I want to do that again. You know, I was ill, didn't matter. And then this phenomenon of craving started quite early, where I just thought, I've got to do this weekend, I've got to do it, I've got to go out. And I was restless, irritable and discontent. I did manage through life to get some really good opportunities, and I'm so grateful for those. You know, a lot of them are screwed up because, you know, again, as it says in the big book, it didn't matter what I was heading towards, what was so important, exams or meetings or whatever. The time and the place would come just before, and I think, well, I'll just have that little drink, you know, because it'll make me feel better. Well, of course, there's no such thing to me as a little drink, it just doesn't happen. And before I knew where I was, I'd missed the deadline, missed the meeting, missed the exam, or failed the exam. But I did manage to get a career that I deeply love, and that again is divine intervention to me. And so I crawled into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just said, help me. The God question didn't bother me at all. I'd been going to church for quite some years. I used to go to St. Andrew's with the girls and my then husband. And it was so, when we started having our birthday dinner at St. Andrew's and then went up to the Preston room, it just was so symbolic to me, and I can't tell you the feeling, because when this group was set up in 94, at that time I was going to the church, but also in the summer holidays, I was part of the groups that would run the holiday club, and we would be all over that church doing different things with young people. And one of them was Preston Room. And to think that that was going on and I still had 4 years of hell left in me, just today, I just sit there and think, thank God, but I didn't know that wonderful thing was going on upstairs when I was downstairs seeking, I don't know what, but what I was seeking was some way out of this misery and this awful way of living. And I didn't know until I came in that this wasn't about alcohol. This was about my inability to life, to live life on life's terms, to accept what other people do naturally. As Jack said, you know, like his girlfriend, I saw people being kind and considerate and caring, and I tried to do all that, but it didn't always work. And then Mark always makes me laugh because he says, and Nick, I think it is, that he always lets that first person out in the mornings in the car. And I tried that. And I'm normally coming home from night duty, so I let them out. And then it's, don't you have a modicum of manners? Thank you, cost nothing. And I just think that's not how it's meant to be. And suffice it to say, with my driving, Wayne's only let me give him a lift once. And I have tried to improve that. But those sort of things were just not in my nature, and I came and I learned. It doesn't matter what age you come in, I needed to learn. And that meant I became sponsorable. I did the suggestions that I was given. I got a basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. I studied the doctor's opinion, which told me who and what I was and how these conditions had come about, and how, you know, if I was lucky and did these things, when I say lucky, I'm talking about willing to listen and do these things, because so many come in and think they can rearrange it, do half and still get away with it. It doesn't happen. And I was to get on my knees in the morning and pray for a sober day, which for me was miraculous, and to pray at night for having had a sober day. And again, that was miraculous, because I just simply didn't before I got here. To write a gratitude list, and my gratitude list today is, I think, like, it's you know, books and books and books and books. And I am just so grateful that I can get grateful. I mean, I was out today in Plymbridge, and, you know, with the dogs, and it all went well until I lost the car key. But just being able to enjoy that time and not feel all screwed up and scrunched up inside, because I needed that drink, I needed that certain release that would come with that first drink, and just enjoying everything that was around me. And then getting a home group and making myself accountable to that home group. Now, in this home group, the structure and discipline will dictate that. If we don't do our service properly, we will be told, and that's happened to people, it's happened to me. You know, and when I first came in, we still had people smoking, so we used to put out ashtrays and saucers in the group. Then we'd go out and collect all the cigarette butts at the end of the meeting. Auntie Jerem was in, he did tea, and he insisted on knowing what everybody had, black, white, coffee, tea, sugar, and that was a little benchmark for everyone else to want to better that. So these things created a group that I could fit into. but only if I was willing to put in what you guys had put in. And the group's changed over the years. Of course it has. You know, it's grown, it's ebbed, it's flowed, and it's irrelevant. My sponsor has always said to me, get yourself to your meeting, sit on your seat, take your place, and share for the newcomer. And for me, I know it's the only thing to do, because if you guys hadn't been here when I needed you so desperately, and I had gone fairly far down. I mean, the only reason I didn't end up on the streets is because I was blessed to have people around me who actually looked after me. But they couldn't stop. They couldn't stop what was happening to me. And I didn't understand it any more than they did. But as the consequences got worse, I still didn't have that ability to call a halt to it. But when I got here, you gave me the key. I needed to have step one, admit I was powerless over alcohol, and that my life was unmanageable. The unmanageability was that I, no matter what I promised, what I thought, I would take that drink again. You know, my life was sort of fairly cobbled together, but I had that awful fear around life. I mean, taking children to school, if the, you know, someone came to the door, I'd dive behind the sofa. All these irrational things which were so real in my head, and the only thing that would fix it. And then you just said to me, you're bog standard alcoholic. We're all the same. We can't live life on life's terms unless we have this spiritual awakening, this psychic change by doing these 12 steps. Be prepared to make amends. Admit that there's a higher power that is greater than you. And to me, it is God. Without a shadow of a doubt, it is God. But it's irrelevant. No one cares what your higher power is, as long as you've got one and don't think you're it. And then when I've given myself, I choose, I made that decision. It says very, very strongly in step three, made a decision. No one forced me. No one can force an alcoholic to do anything. But I made that decision to have my will and my life over the care of God. And then I made that list of step four, all my defects of character, my goodness, enough, go on. And I just saw for the first time I was the maker of not only my misery, but the misery of people, everyone around me I loved. Not deliberately, but it was always going to happen. And the only way I could clear my side of the street was to be full and thorough with it, totally honest in a way I've never really known honesty before, put down my defects of character, my pride, my jealousy, my arrogance, everything, my dishonesty, and then share it with my sponsor and God as I understood them. And that weight that lifted, that rucksack that had been on my back for so many, many years was lifted. And of course, I was always going to make mistakes and have my defects. But in 6 and 7, it said that, you know, if we honestly pray to have those removed, then they can be manageable. They can be right-sized. And if they get out of control again, then you've got a sponsor, you've got old timers who will tell you, trust me. And then in 8, you know, which is your step 4, first column, you make amends. You write a list of people that you need to make amends to. And I was still beaten enough, so I never sort of said, this I won't do. I knew I needed to. And in step 9, that's what I did. I went out. You know, some I couldn't make amends to, like my father. He'd already died. But I wrote a letter and read it out to my sponsor. And I was able to make amends to my mother, who, you know, who'd been worried sick for years and years. And to my daughters, which is a great blessing. I mean, my eldest daughter still just this isn't happening to her. The only thing she allowed me to do was make amends to her. And however, you know, anyone takes those amends, it is entirely up to them. It's my job to make sure that I try to make those amends and, you know, then just show them that I'm not going to behave like that, because I don't behave like that anymore today. I live in a completely different world where she can trust me. My grandchildren never see me drunk. And, you know, we do have ones. I've both the children, and I've got a career that I'm truly blessed to do. But at the end of this, if I'm not sharing back, if I'm not doing my step tens and looking at my part in everyday life, and maybe at work I just need to nip into the loo or close my eyes, you know, just to, God help me, that person's just going to get it. You know, I've got to see my part in it all the time. And then through prayer and meditation, now for me, a large part, and this is only me, one of the things that has helped me really significantly is when we had our lovely days going to Buckfast, is that Buckfast Liz being able to, I just decided I'd read the Modern Bible, which is all in everyday terms. And I've used that as my step 11, and it's been incredible to do something that has meaning to me, because before it was all about, well, I want to get this and I want to get that. And today I have a wonderful home life. I'm married to a wonderful guy that, you know, some of you know. And as I say, I don't live in a war zone, but most importantly, I've got happy sobriety, and I'm so blessed and grateful for that. And I know I use the words blessed and grateful, but that this, you know, this program from Dr. Bill and Bob, were Dr. Bob and Bill, you know, was created by divine intervention, I believe, because how else could this have come about? Because thousands, millions died before this. And just the thing I want to end on is, in the basic sets, it said, I've been brought up to believe in God, but I know that until I found this AA program, I had never found or known faith in the reality of God, the reality of his power that is now with me in everything I do. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I'd now like to introduce today's final speaker, Matthew.
Sandy. Yeah, my name's Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Matt.
And I'm absolutely delighted to be here. And yeah, my home group is the Road to Recovery group in Sydney, Australia. It meets on Friday night. And you're all welcome to come. And yeah, it's been a bit nerve-wracking being here in front of so many people. And but my sponsor gave me some really good advice that, you know, is great, that, you know, whenever you get an opportunity to share, just carry AA's message to the still suffering alcoholic. And I can do that because, it's my experience that this program works. It's powerful. It's real. And, you know, the evidence is, yeah, it's happened to me. You know, I'm sober today, in my 10th year of sobriety. And, yeah, I'm free from that bondage of self. And not only has it happened to me, but it's, I've seen it work in other people. You know, I've seen it just change people's lives, and it really is truly remarkable to be a part of this. And for that, I thank you guys, you know, especially the Road to Recovery group, you know, my sponsor, and for all the work that you're doing today and have done. Cause, you know, through an amazing series of events, you know, just that message of recovery has been passed from one alcoholic to another all around the world. And, you know, just a few hours ago, there were 20 alcoholics in my home group who were recovered, you know, and united in that, you know, carrying the message, and just enjoying life. And it's a beautiful thing, because for that brief moment, you know, that one night, there are, you know, 20 people who aren't drink driving, you know, on the streets of Sydney. There's 20 people who aren't, like, you know, smashing up a pub and getting into fights, or, you know, just 20 people who aren't smashing up the house. And, you know, it's beautiful, man. It brings a tear to my eye, and seeing that happening here as well, it's great all around the world. And yeah, so on behalf of all the guys in Sydney, thank you as well. So, and if my mum was here, she'd say thank you too as well, because not only, yeah, am I sober, but, you know, my mum today, you know, she can go to sleep knowing that, although I'm on the other side of the world, you know, she's not going to get that phone call from the cops saying, yeah, we found Matt, he jumped in front of a train, or, you know, or, you know, my sister will thank you too. You know, she knows you know, not going to be coming around and stealing alcohol and stuff from a house. And, you know, my brother, he's not going to have to come and visit his loser older brother in rehab and give him a carton of smokes, you know, and I'll borrow some more money off him. And, you know, so it's great, mate. Not only is it working in my life, but the lives of everyone who I come into contact with, you know, it's beautiful. This is an amazing, amazing program. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is awesome and it's really good news. That there is a solution, there is a way out. And, you know, the only effort required is just to follow a few simple rules. You know, the 12-step program of recovery is outlined in the big book. And, like I heard tonight from the previous speakers, you know, yeah, if you do what we do, you know, you will get the same result. This never fails. You know, this is awesome, powerful stuff. And, but if you're anything like me, when I first came into AA, you know, it didn't really strike me as good news when I first heard that, you know, this is what I had to do to recover. But, you know, I was soon to get to that place where there was nothing left for me. Cause when I first came here, I couldn't see that alcohol was my problem or, you know, to be in a situation where I couldn't drink, like you're saying that I had to stay, like I can't drink anymore. You know, I couldn't accept that, you know, cause for me, alcohol, you know, although it was causing all those problems, it was just amazing stuff, you know, and even, you know, that bond I had with alcohol, you know, started off that very first time I got drunk, being about, you know, 15 years old and just being at a party with all these older people there. And, you know, just went there like my usual self, just being shy and insecure and not really fitting in, not being able to talk to anyone, definitely not dancing and, you know, definitely not talk to any girls and stuff. But, you know, just having a couple of drinks, it just, in an instant, it changed all of that, you know. The big book describes it, you know, wonderfully in that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a few drinks. And that happened that very first time. And that effect was to change my life, really, because it just, for the first time, I felt alive. You know, I felt that this is awesome. You know, this is how I want to be. This has got the power for me to feel good. And that, you know, that later that night, you know, I was dancing, you know, I was jumping off the roof into the swimming pool, you know, I was best friends with all the older, cooler guys at school, you know, and just having a great night, you know, it was a great stuff. It just changed my life, you know, but something even, you know, happened that very first night that I didn't even worry about at the time. But what I know today that I experienced that phenomenon of craving, you know, from that very first time I drank, because after, you know, the party had finished, everyone going home. I was still there and, I wanted more to drink. And I remember asking, you know, some of the guys, has anyone got any more beers? And he was like, no, man, we're out. And I remember like going to the kitchen and, you know, searching through the kitchen pantry and I found some cooking brandy up the back and I sat down in the kitchen. I turned the light off because I didn't want anyone to see. And I just began just throwing down these shots with, you know, blocking my nose, but just cooking brandy because I just wanted to see, like, you know, how far can I take this? I just wasn't satisfied. It was always just one more, you know, you just get that one more. And that's where we want to, you know, it was crazy. And, yeah. But, you know, from that moment on, like, I guess things worked out pretty well, you know, with alcohol. Now I could do some pretty cool stuff and, you know, I did amazing things. You know, I went to places I could never have gone to sober. You know, I did things that were just out of my reach sober, you know, but now I could just do all this cool stuff. But, you know, really I was, you know, the Bill describes it as, you know, I was just a, you know, forged that boomerang that would one day, you know, come back and all but cut me to pieces, you know. And I just got progressively sicker and so deluded and just, you know, it was just crazy. And, you know, my drinking just went out of control. There were times where, you know, I'd even know that like my drinking's not good and I've got to cut back and, you know, and I'd try and control it. You know, there were times where I'd kind of, man, this is getting out of control. So what I would do is, I'd be working in a bar in the city and one of the things we'd have staff drinks after work and I'd always get like absolutely smashed and I wouldn't be able to get home till, you know, late. And so I thought, well, what I'll do, right, is I'll drive the car to work. That way I can only have two drinks because you can only have two drinks and then you're over the limit. That's my control plan. And it's, you know, for anyone else, that would probably make sense. And so I'd do that. I'd drive to work. And after work, I'd stay and have two drinks and say, look, I've got to go. You know, I've got the car. So I'd drive home, but just when I'm getting home, the last pub, I think, I'll just stop there and I'll just have one more drink. So I've probably sobered up a little bit now. And that means I could have one more drink and So I go to the pub and I'd have that drink and I think, oh man, that phenomenon of craving's kicking in, you know, and there's no way I'm stopping now, you know. So I'd kind of think, well, it was always really late at night. It'd be like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning and all the bottle shops are closed, but now I've had 3 beers and I've got to get drunk, you know, but I've got the car. So what I think, okay, well, I'll go and I'll just buy some beers at the bar, right? And they'd have to take the tops off and I'd put them down my shirt and then I'd walk out past the bouncers and into my car and then I'd start filling up the car with, like open beer bottles, right? And so I'd end up getting about, you know, eight beer bottles and I'd put them in the pocket behind the seats and in the drink holders and I'd be holding them in my legs and then I'd be driving home with the car just full of all these open bottles, knowing that I've just got to get this alcohol home to finish the job, you know, and it was crazy. And, you know, I mean, that's just insane. For me, trying to control my drinking, it ends up just so out of control. It's outrageous. And, you know, there are other times when I come home and just the drinking, like, I'll be living with my sister and, you know, when you come home and you're not quite drunk enough, but the bottle shop's closed and you're sitting there in my bedroom just going, man, I need some more alcohol. And then I'd know that my sister's got some alcohol in her room. You know, she had this bottle of port that she got for her 21st birthday. I'm sitting in this room, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm not quite drunk enough and there's a bottle of port in the next room. And so I go in, you know, to her room and sneak in and grab the alcohol and sneak out and be all quiet. And I just down that just so I can get to sleep. And the next day when she'd go off to work, I'd fill it up with water and put it back in there so she wouldn't know that, you know, anything would happen. And then when the next paycheck would come in, I'd go and buy 2 bottles of port and fill her bottle of port up with port and then put it back. And I'd, crazy. And I used to do this like all the time, you know, just constantly drinking this port. And then one night I remember I came home, I did it again, you know, and I went in, I snuck it through and picked out this bottle of port and got it back to my room and sat down and, you know, now I know I'm going to be able to get to sleep, you know, and I'm just pouring that glass out of port and it was water, you know, and it just backfired on me so badly. And I don't know. That's just not normal stuff. But I guess, you know, I started to, yeah, my life just fell apart, you know, the depression, the anxiety and, you know, I couldn't hold down jobs and, you know, relationships were just falling apart. And, you know, I ended up, you know, after one particular night, just getting into a lot of trouble and smashing up the house and the police called and the ambulances came round and I got taken off to the mental hospital and was really presented with the reality of my situation that, look what drinking's doing to me. You know, you could kind of see, you know, I was covered in blood and, you know, my mum's distraught and, you know, I had time to reflect that this is pretty serious stuff, you know. And then the doctor said, mate, you've got to stop drinking. And okay, if drinking is my problem, then I'll just stop. I'll just cut it out. You know, if the reason my life's so bad, I'm just going to stop drinking. And, I made a promise there to myself. I promised my mum, you know, I promised the doctors there. That's it. I'm through. And I meant it, you know, with every ounce of that's it, man. I can't put up this stuff anymore. And, but then just the same thing would always happen, you know, it'd be after I'd make that decision, my mind would just begin to change. You know, the things would start to go my way again. Like, I remember the doctor prescribed me some Valium, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't too bad. And I got a new girlfriend in the rehab. So it's like, oh yeah, things, you know, I'm looking up a bit. And then the doctor gave me a note from the Centrelink office that I could get money for free. I didn't have to work anymore. Sickness benefits. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. I think I've got this back together. And in such a short period of time, you know, my ego's revived and, you know, I'm back. In fact, it's never been this good before, you know. I'm getting free drugs, free money. I've got a girlfriend, you know. What exactly is the problem here again? You know, like I could not see just how much trouble I was in. You know, I didn't grasp the severity of it. It was just a little bit of a game. And but I remember leaving that hospital, you know, and on the way home to my sister's place, who I'd promised that I would not drink on the condition that, you know, I could stay at her house. She'd help me get back on my feet, you know, the only requirement, just don't drink. And I said, yeah, no worries. I'm not drinking anymore. But on the way home, you know, I went to the pub and just started playing the poker machines. I had some time to kill before the train came. And then just like that, the thought comes, you know, well, why don't we just have a beer? You know, you've got half an hour till the train comes. You've only got time for one anyway. So, you know, and that today I know is the real essence of my problem. It's in that's, you know, that moment before that first drink, that it's a strange mental blank spot, you know, I don't have a defense against that first drink. It's crazy, you know, because a week ago, you know, the most amazing carnage of my life. I'm sworn off it forever, you know. Everybody's like, this is serious. A week later, oh, whatever, you know, I'll just have a drink. And that's what is just absolutely hopeless, you know, is that my mind will just change and just talk me back into drinking again. And it was crazy. And I remember, you know, it took me a long time to really see just how serious that was, you know. But you know, I went to counselors and psychologists and tried all this medication and went to all these rehabs. And, you know, long story short, I remember, you know, I'm about to leave my fifth rehab, you know, and everyone, you know, I'm ready to go a few days out, and they're all, you know, pumping me up, psyching me up. Matt, you gotta stay sober, go out there and kick some goals. And had my relapse prevention workbook and had all my phone numbers of all my new best friends. We're all gonna meet up and go to meetings. And, you know what I mean? And I had this council appointment lined up. And for the first time, I just saw through it all and just thought, no, I'm not looking forward to this at all. In fact, I'm absolutely terrified. You know, I know that I've been in this situation before. You know, it doesn't matter how serious I am or how many promises I make or how determined I am or how many, you know, workbooks or books that I, you know, I'm hopeless. You know, I'm going to leave this rehab and my mind is going to change, you know, and it's just a matter of time. It's like maybe a week, maybe a couple of months, but my mind will just go to that point where I will start drinking again. And I saw that for the very first time. And it just, it absolutely terrified me because I knew that there was nothing I could do about that, you know, because I know I'm going to leave there and I'm going to suffer, you know, and it's horrible. You know, sobriety for me is just, I can put up with it for a while, but eventually, you know, I just get so restless and so irritable, so discontent. And, you know, I just can't relax and everyone just pisses me off and you just don't understand, you know, just leave me alone, you know, just back off. You know, and I want out of there. It's a horrible place to be. You know, the depression is just killing me and anxiety is like, you know what I mean? And again, you know, I get to that point, I get so worked up and, you know, I hate myself. I'm just crippled with resentments. You know, I'm just reliving all the failures of my past and all the bad stuff that's happened to me and all the people I hate. And I just yearn. I yearn to feel good. You know, I yearn to get out from that and just to once again, just relax and have some fun. And, you know, and then there's nothing I can do to kickstart that. I can't, you know, I've tried everything and eventually I'll be so insane and so mad that my mind will just begin that insane dialogue that, you know what, maybe we could get it to work this time. Maybe if we just drink light beer or, you know, maybe, right, what we'll do, right, we'll wait till 5 o'clock or we'll just drink on the weekends or, you know, there'll be something that will just come up, you know, and I may postpone it, but eventually I'll just give way and think, you know what, I don't care, man, because whatever's going to happen, man, I'll throw it all away for that crazy chance that this time I could once again control and enjoy my drinking, you know, and that's insane. And that is so insane and so crazy because for me, once I start to drink, you know, there's nothing in it anymore. The party's over, man. It's just that phenomenon of craving. It's just straight to blackout, you know, and straight to the drugs and the gambling. And I'm going to die, really. You know, it's serious. Like for me to drink again, there's nothing left, man. It's just death, you know, suicide, death. That's it, over. And then, yeah, I remember I'm out of my rehab now and I'm in AA and, but this time was different. I was beaten this time. I had step one. I didn't even know what it was, but I'd thrown in the towel, man. I was crushed. Nothing left, you know. And I didn't know what to do. And the only place for me to go was AA. But thank God, you know, because that's when I was in that point, that's when that message of hope was carried to me. You know, when my ego was just smashed out away just long enough for that inkling of hope to come through. But, you know, it had been there the whole time. You know, the 12-step program, it was presented to me for years. And I just didn't buy it. But when I was desperate and there's nowhere else to go, you know, this was my only chance. But still, I was still so hesitant. You know, I didn't want to do this. And I didn't want to ask anyone for help. I didn't want to take any inventory. I didn't want to make amends. I didn't even think I needed to make amends. You know, people needed to make amends to me. Like there was, that could be a program I could do, but I just couldn't see how this could work. Like, why? You know, but what sold me on accepting this spiritual way of life was you people, you know, was other alcoholics who had gone before me, you know, and you know, my sponsor, I remember him, you know, it was just like a spotlight clear as day. You know, he got up and shared, and bang, for the first time, you know, I identified with another alcoholic on such a deep level, because he was a guy who knew my experience through his own experience. You know, he'd walked the walk. He drank like I drank, and he suffered like I had suffered, and he felt like I felt. And you know, all of those drinking stories and all the attempts to stop drinking, all of that stuff, you know, he'd done. And I was like, God, this guy's me. But he wasn't there anymore. He wasn't where I, you know, he was on a different footing. You know, he was sober. He was recovered. He was happy and free. And he was traveling around the world, and he was, you know, easy in his own company, and he was having fun, you know, and he was sober. And that was really good news, you know, because that's what just gave me enough hope that if it could work for him, then maybe it could work for me too. And even more so, he was actively looking for people like me that night. You know, he came straight up to me after the meeting, and he introduced himself and said, "How you going?" You know, and no one had ever done that. I remember thinking, there's no way he wants to hang around such a loser like me, but he was there to hang around such a loser like me that night, you know, and thank God he did, because you saved my life. You know, you stretched out that hand of AA and said, you know, welcome, you know, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and that was probably the hardest thing I'd ever done, you know, because up until then I'd never asked anyone for help, you know, but you know, he just inspired such confidence and trust in me that I'll give this a shot. And I just asked him, yeah, would you be my sponsor? And he said, yeah, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I had no idea what he meant, so I said yes. But yeah, it was just, yeah, we started taking daily actions, you know, straight away, you know, things like it was mentioned tonight, you know, praying on my knees, asking for a clean and sober day, you know, writing a gratitude list, phoning newcomers, you know, getting stuck into service and reading the big book and all this stuff that I didn't think, you know, was relevant or worth, but he just said, no, just do it, just take these actions. And I did. And what can I say? You know, from that moment, I was well and truly on the road to recovery. You know, I began to recover from alcoholism, and what an amazing experience. And it was amazing. And in no time at all, I did my third step prayer and straight into my fourth step. And thank God I had a good sponsor who was properly armed with facts about himself. He knew what it was to be an alcoholic. And more importantly, he knew how to recover, you know, and he could shine that spotlight of truth on me when he showed me how to do a step four, because I had no idea any of that stuff was going on in me, but bang, he just showed me, like, writing out inventory, you know, and I remember him showing me some of his stuff. I'm like, oh my God, that is so sick and twisted, you know. But he saved my life, because all of that crazy stuff that he'd done, he could share that with me and allow me to begin that process of recovery. So his past was his greatest asset, because that saved my life. And I think that is the coolest thing about AA, you know, that, yeah, him sharing that allowed me to share it with him. And wow, you know, the first time I wrote down all those resentments, and that was what was killing me, you know. And I could see it from a totally different point of view. I see where I'd been wrong. I was full of pride or arrogance and self-pity, self-centeredness. I didn't think any of that stuff applied to me, but suddenly it all applies to me. And my God, it, the truth set me free. I could see what my problem was. And, you know, as hard as it was, you know, we went through it and just my whole life, bang, flipped it up, you know, upside down. And I remember sharing all that with my sponsor, my step five, and he didn't call the cops or kick me out. He just said, Matt, welcome to the human race, you know. How cool is that, you know? And from that moment on, man, I had that amazing spiritual experience, you know, where all of that stuff I've been carrying around in me, you know, the anger and hatred, and it was like black lead in my blood, you know, heavy, and it just left, you know, over the next few days, it just flew away. And I remember the first time, yeah, I stood in the sunlight of the Spirit, and I just, yeah, I can do this. I can live in this world sober, you know. That feeling of the drink problem had just gone, you know, just out of the ballpark. And it was just an amazing, I was free, you know, and that was a higher power in my life. You know, the default setting, just all of that bad stuff cleared away, and I'm connected. And then from that moment, you know, I just worked through the rest of the steps and, just continue to take those actions today, you know, and for the last 10 years, and it's put me in such good stead. And I've just grown up, you know, and enjoyed all the amazing things of life. You know, I got off the sickness benefits, would you believe? stopped smoking, you know, went back to uni and then graduated top of the class and got a job in the industry I studied for. My sister asked me to babysit her kids, you know. I hang out with my mum, and, you know, I travel the world, and, you know, today I'm here in Munich from work. You know, they sent me on an overseas European assignment. You know, if they knew where I was 10 years ago, I don't think they'd be doing that now. But what a thrill. You know, my life is just incredible today. But it's the same. I'm active already in the Munich Fellowship. You know, I'm sponsoring a guy there and just getting stuck into it. It's great. Great to be a part of it. And, yeah, it's just amazing. I have a higher power in my life, you know, as a result of taking these actions that has completely transformed my whole way of thinking, my whole thought and attitude. You know, it's entirely different. And, the dark and musty past, all of the bad shit stuff I had done is now, one of my greatest assets, you know, because I've had the privilege of sponsoring other people, you know, taking them through the work. And I tell you what, that is an absolute thrill to be a part of that, to play a part in someone's recovery and see the lights come on in them and to see them go through that process and, you know, go and make amends to their father and see their children back in their life and then once again become useful, productive members of society, you know. And that's what a thrill. I mean, this is good stuff, you know. That's what keeps me here, because not only do I have a great life, I just see it working around me, and it's a real thrill. And with a higher power in my life, you know, I feel okay. You know, I feel, even though life's really tough sometimes, you know, and relationships and, you know, heartbreak and all that, but I can get through it all, you know, because I've got a sponsor and my commitments in my home group and my higher power. Because I know that deep down everything's going to be okay, no matter what. That's pretty cool, you know, and I don't need to seek that escape from alcohol and drugs anymore, because it's just, I can see it for what it is. It's poison. It's nothing in it, you know. That ease and comfort that alcohol kind of promised, I get that right here tonight, you know, with a higher power in my life. Just, everything's going to be all right. And so if you're new, welcome. You know, this is, it's a great place to be. And if you've yet to find a solution to alcoholism, or even if you've been around and you're yet to, you know, have that life beyond your wildest dreams and know what it is to be free, get stuck in, you know, grab yourself a sponsor and get one tonight and just start take their guidance, you know, work these actions, follow those 12 steps out of that big book, and you'll be amazed at some. It's really good stuff. I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and Wayne, thanks for asking me to share, and I'll leave there. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.